If it seems some member states of the European Union are living on borrowed time, it's because in many ways the very model of the European Union may have failed them. To help Solari subscribers understand the current geopolitics of currency and sovereign debt wars in Europe, Catherine spoke with British historian and philosopher John Lockland. John serves as the Director of Studies at the Institute of Democracy and Cooperation in Paris. Here, he shares the history of the European Union and the role it played in the current debt crisis.
I think that the European Union does have structural weaknesses, which will sooner or later prove fatal to the whole project. In other words, they are such that the project cannot last. The European Union obviously came into being in 1957. It was built on the earlier coal and steel community created in 1951. And as the dates suggest, its origins lie really in the Cold War. It was a largely US-sponsored trading and political and economic bloc. I say US-sponsored because some Europeans imagined that it was created as a rival to the United States, and I've never believed that to be true. But anyway, it was a Cold War creation which expanded dramatically after the end of the Cold War, albeit not immediately so, and now, of course, has 27 member states. And it's responded to successive waves of enlargement. It originally had 6 member states, and then it went to 9 and 12 and 15. Now, as I say, it has 27. It's responded to these successive waves of enlargement by increasing centralization of power. That's really the bottom line. The centralization of power has been going on now dramatically since the mid-1980s, and it takes the form, quite simply, of transferring more and more competences and more powers to the European level in the absence of any democratic control over these powers. And by the way, in the deliberate absence of any democratic control, it's absolutely clear when you study the way that European leaders behave that one of their main purposes in building the European Union was precisely to escape from democratic control. The European Union allows European leaders, national leaders, to make policy and laws without having to subject them to parliamentary scrutiny. That's the basic constitutional trick about the European Union. It does that because laws in the European Union are made by the governments. So it's a great trick, really, for governments to obtain lawmaking powers. Right. And the other way that there is centralization is by transferring power to bureaucracies, to administrative organs, bureaucracies which are not elected and not accountable. Most famous one is, of course, the European Commission, which has been in place ever since the EU was created, which is a bureaucracy, but it has far greater powers than any other bureaucracy in any democracy. And the second organization, which is extremely important, I think, for our discussion today, is obviously the European Central Bank, because when the euro was created in 1999, the member states, there were then 11, there are now 16, transferred their monetary policy to a central organization. And now they decide their monetary policy independently, both of their respective national governments, but also, I would say, irrespective of their national electorates. So to sum up, at every stage, there's been centralization, and it's centralization which I emphasize is anti-democratic in nature. And that's the source of the fatal weakness of the European project.
And it's also, when you have a centralized currency like that, it's not only undemocratic, but it's not thoughtful to different economies. So you have
exactly.
Very different economies within the European Union. And it can be remarkably destabilizing to both the strong and the weak, because there's a whole group of things you can solve with different currencies that now you can, and the currency can just wreak havoc with the different economies.
Yes, and the other side, I mean, obviously, that's one very important point. Interest rates are the same for these widely differing economies.
Right.
But the existence of a eurozone has also had another effect, which I think your listeners, I'm sure, know about, which is, and which indeed was predicted at the time by Eurosceptics, in other words, people who are sceptic of the project of monetary union, and that is that because there is now one single currency area, states are encouraged to borrow recklessly.
Right.
Because the normal effect of borrowing recklessly would, of course, be to weaken the national currency. But when you share a currency with other states, then you basically have the free rider problem, whereby states can borrow as much as they like, safely in the knowledge that their borrowing is only a small percentage of the overall euro debt. And therefore, they can get away with a lot more than they perhaps would have been able to do if they had national currencies. Now, that may have been their gamble, but the gamble hasn't paid off, or at least it's in the process of unraveling. And this is what we refer to, of course, as the crisis in the eurozone. The fact is that the weak countries, particularly Greece, Ireland, Spain, and Portugal, are saddled with levels of debt, which they are literally finding it impossible to repay. They simply can't raise enough money in tax to pay the interest repayments. Because, of course, as you know, again, as your listeners know, although their currency is shared, the bond prices, the borrowing prices for respective governments depend on the country in question. So Ireland, for instance, today, literally today, the 4th of November, its bond yields have hit a record high, I think, of 7.36%. In other words, Ireland is paying a gigantic premium to borrow money over the benchmark rate for the borrowing by Germany.
That was British historian and philosopher John Lockland. John serves as the Director of Studies at the Institute of Democracy and Cooperation in Paris. To hear the complete briefing, become a subscriber to the Solari Report at solari.com.
Well, good morning, Mr. Van Rompuy. You've been in office for 1 year, and in that time, the whole edifice is beginning to crumble. There's chaos. The money's running out. I should thank you. You should perhaps be the pin-up boy of the Eurosceptic movement. But just look around this chamber this morning. Just look at these faces. Look at the fear. Look at the anger. Poor old Barroso here looks like he's seen a ghost. You know, they're beginning to understand that the game is up. And yet, in their desperation to preserve their dream, they want to remove any remaining traces of democracy from the system. And it's pretty clear that none of you have learned anything. Now, when you yourself, Mr. Van Rompuy, say that the euro has brought us stability, I suppose I could applaud you for having a sense of humour, but isn't this really just the bunker mentality? You know, your fanaticism is out in the open. You talked about the fact that it was a lie to believe that the nation state could exist in a 21st century globalised world. Well, that may be true in the case of Belgium, who haven't had a government for 6 months, but for the rest of us, right across every member state in this union, and perhaps this is why we see the fear in the faces, increasingly people are saying, we don't want that flag, we don't want the anthem, we don't want this political class, we want the whole thing consigned to the dustbin of history. And we had the Greek tragedy earlier on this year, and now we have the situation in Ireland. Now I know that the stupidity and greed of Irish politicians has a lot to do with this. They should never, ever have joined the euro. They suffered with low interest rates, a false boom, and a massive bust. But look at your response to them. What they're being told, as their government's collapsing, is that it would be inappropriate for them to have a general election. In fact, Commissioner Wren here said they had to agree their budget first before they'd be allowed to have a general election. Just who the hell do you think you people are? You are very, very dangerous people indeed. Your obsession with creating this euro state means that you're happy to destroy democracy. You appear to be happy for millions and millions of people to be unemployed and to be poor. Untold millions must suffer so that your euro dream can continue. Well, it won't work, because it's Portugal next. With their debt levels of 325% of GDP, they're the next ones on the list, and after that, I suspect it'll be Spain. And the bailout for Spain would be 7 times the size of Ireland, and at that moment, all of the bailout money has gone. There won't be any more. But it's even more serious than economics, because if you rob people of their identity, if you rob them of their democracy, then all they are left with is nationalism and violence. I can only hope and pray that the euro project is destroyed by the markets before that really happens. We were told that when we had a president, we'd see a giant global political figure, the man that would be the political leader for 500 million people, the man that would represent all of us on the world stage, the man whose job was so important that, of course, you're paid more than President Obama. Well, I'm afraid what we got was you. And I'm sorry, but after that performance earlier that you gave, and I don't want to be rude, but you know, really, you have the charisma of a damp rag and the appearance of a low-grade bank clerk. And the question that I want to ask, that we're all going to ask, is who are you? I'd never heard of you. Nobody in Europe had ever heard of you. I would like to ask you, President, who voted for you? And what mechanism? Oh, I know democracy's not popular with you lot. And what mechanism do the peoples of Europe have to remove you? Is this European democracy? Well, I sense, though, that you're competent and capable and dangerous, and I have no doubt that it's your intention to be the quiet assassin of European democracy and of the European nation states. You appear to have a loathing for the very concept of the existence of nation states. Perhaps that's because you come from Belgium, which, of course, is pretty much a non-country. But since you took over, we've seen Greece reduced for nothing more than a protectorate. Sir, you have no legitimacy in this job at all, and I can say with confidence that I can speak on behalf of the majority of the British people in saying, we don't know you, we don't want you, and the sooner you're put out to grass, the better. President, Mr. Barroso says, I think my team is of high quality. Well, let's conduct a human audit. Now, I'm mindful that audits aren't very popular in the European Commission, and that auditors, if they do their job properly, get fired, but nonetheless, here goes. From France, we have Mr. Jacques Barrot. He'll take on transport. In 2000, he received an 8-month suspended jail sentence for his involvement in an embezzlement case and was banned from holding public office for 2 years. From Hungary, we have Mr. Kovács. He'll take on taxation. For many years, a communist apparatchik, a friend of Mr. Kedar, the dictator there, and an outspoken opponent of the values that we hold dear in the West. His new empire will produce taxation policy, and he'll look after the customs union from Cork across to Vilnius. Are the EPP and British Conservatives really going to vote for that? Yes. From Estonia, we have Mr. Kallas. For 20 years, a Soviet party apparatchik, until his newly acquired taste for capitalism got him into some trouble. Though, to be fair, he was acquitted of abuse and fraud, but convicted for providing false information, and he's going to be in charge of the anti-fraud drive. I mean, you couldn't make it up. From the UK, we've got Peter Mandelson. He'll take on the trade portfolio. He, of course, twice was removed from the British government, yet, to be fair, he's one of the more competent ones. From the Netherlands, we've got Nelly Kroes. She'll take on competition. She's accused of lying to the European Parliament. Now, these may only be allegations, but they're made by Mr. Van Buitenen, and I think should be listened to. Ask yourself a question. Would you buy a used car from this commission? I mean, the answer simply must be no. But even if they were competent, even if this was a high-quality commission, and sorry, Mr. Barroso, but I don't think it is, even if it was a high-quality commission, we would still vote no on the political principle that it's the commission that is the guardian of the treaties, that it's the commission that is the motor for integration, that it's the commission that initiates the legislation that is damaging our businesses across Europe so badly. It is the commission that is the embodiment of all that is worst in this European Union. It is the commission that is the government of Europe and is not directly accountable to anybody. And please, when you vote, take note that 20 of these commissioners have already said that they intend to attempt to implement the Constitution even before it's been ratified by member states' governments. In the face of such breathtaking arrogance, nobody in the Independence and Democracy Group will vote for this commission. Thank you. Okay.